You may have heard me mention over the last few months that my brother is the Deputy Secretary of Labor of the United States. And after Inauguration Day, the woman who was the Secretary of Labor, Hilda Solis, stepped down from that job. It's not an unusual thing. There are always lots of resignations when a president is beginning their second term. And so there's no official Secretary of Labor because they don't have anybody to replace her yet. Somebody has to be vetted and then appointed and then confirmed by the Senate. In the meantime, somebody has to be the Secretary of Labor. And because my brother was number two in that position, effectively as the chief operating officer of the Labor Department, he has stepped up and moved into the big office, and he is the acting Secretary of Labor. One of the cool things about that job is not just getting the big office and getting to go around and have people call you Mr. Secretary, but also that on Tuesday night, he got to go to the State of the Union address. And I don't mean sitting up in the gallery in the corner next to the Boy Scouts or the invited guests or even near Mrs. Obama. No, he was down there on the floor of the United States Congress in this joint session when President Obama addressed the nation. Now, that's an experience that you and I are never going to have. And up until, a month ago, he probably thought he would never have it either. But now he has, and I thought, let's hear that first-person story. So here's my brother Seth joining us this afternoon. Do I have to say hello, Mr. Secretary, to my own brother?
I would prefer that you do that. Yes, you should call me Mr. Secretary. I'm also making Mom call me Mr. Secretary. I hope that's okay.
If it's okay with her, it's okay with me. So let's start off with what that day is like. You work your regular day of work at the Labor Department, and then in the afternoon, do you have to go home and pick out a tie?
My kids and Karen, my wife and I, picked out the tie that morning, and it was a very a heated discussion. And as you know, my youngest child is a now competitive debater, and so he won. And so I went with the red tie, but I brought a change of clothes to the office, mostly because it's a really long day. You know, I get into the office at 8:30 in the morning, and the State of the Union begins at 9 p.m. at night, and I just didn't want to feel uncomfortable walking in to the State of the Union and sitting there listening to the speech. So I brought a change of clothes and had the red tie ready to go and worked that full day and then off to the State of the Union.
Okay, so is there something that goes on beforehand? Do you get together with the other cabinet secretaries and do rock, paper, scissors to see who goes in first? What happens there?
Well, I actually have the order of the people who walk into the room, I believe, is in the order of succession. So Secretary Kerry, I believe, was first into the room because the State Department is the oldest of the departments, and that's so that's how you determine the order of succession. So he led us into the room. But prior to going to the Capitol for the State of the Union, there was a dinner of all the cabinet secretaries, which I had never, I didn't know they did that, and I had never attended it before, and I can't tell you anything about it because it was completely off the record.
Okay.
But it was a thrill because I was sitting in a room with a bunch of people I really deeply respect and admire tremendously. Some of them have become friends just from my time in the administration, and it's just the president has selected a remarkable group of people to be in his cabinet, and they've accomplished a tremendous amount, and they've weathered some very, very difficult political fights. And so it was a tremendous honor to be at the table with him, and I shared with him how surprised I was to be able to participate. But then we raced over to the Capitol building in a cavalcade of oversized black SUVs with lights flashing and to get ready for the speech.
Already at that point, you're going, this is cool.
Oh, I've been saying that a lot longer than the day of the State of the Union. I have to say this, a remarkable opportunity, and really grateful to have the opportunity to serve in this position. And it's something, as you said, I never expected was going to happen. And I really enjoyed working with my boss and was sorry to see her go. But some tremendous opportunities have presented themselves because of it. And this was one of them. This was absolutely one of them.
I want to go back to this off-the-record thing for just a second, because people might be curious. You're in government. I'm a broadcaster. We're brothers. Are there times where you're telling me stuff and telling me, oh, don't talk about this on the air? I have to be honest, in all the years that you've been doing this, and it's been over 20 years now that you've been working at the federal level in important jobs, I don't think I've asked you all that much about your job, because I know that we have that line that we can't cross.
Right.
But every once in a while in a conversation, you will say to me, all right, now you can't talk about this. And I have to respect that, but it's always personal stuff. It's like when my wife says, all right, I have to tell you about something that happened at work. You can't tell anybody about this. You can't talk about it on your radio show. That's the level of our off-the-recordness, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so now the other thing I want to know about is, before you get to go to the Capitol as a member of the cabinet, I know that there is what's called the 13th man, which is a member of the cabinet who does not go to the Capitol for the State of the Union address, because the thinking is, if something disastrous were to happen, if some calamity were to be there, some terrorist attack that, you know, the Capitol blew up that night and all of these top people in government were gone, okay, well, who would be the leadership of this country? And so they always choose one member of the cabinet to do that. Obviously, since you got to go to the State of the Union, that wasn't you. Who was the unlucky person this year?
I believe that it was Energy Secretary Chu, who was not at the State of the Union. But here's the thing about whether I had a fear of being one of those people. If you step back a little bit and ask yourself, do we really want the acting Secretary of Labor to become the President of the United States? You pretty much know that you're not going to be picked. Right? There was no chance that I was going to be picked to be the person to be out of the building. And so I really didn't. Honestly, I didn't have a fear. I was not sure. Honestly, I was not sure that I was going to be invited to go. I mean, I had been told that they were going to ask that I be invited. But, you know, I got to say, when you're the acting secretary, you know you're not going to be in the job permanently. You don't want to step on anybody's toes. You don't want to be presumptuous. You absolutely don't want to embarrass the president in any way. You know, you're sort of just happy to be there. I'll be honest. It's kind of like being a nominee in one of the technical categories at the Academy Awards. You're just happy to be there. And so I'm just happy to be able to serve in this role. The idea that I would be able to go to the State of the Union was so out of my realm of possibility that I was really trying very hard to not look like I was expecting anything. And I was absolutely delighted when I was told that I would have the opportunity to go. It was, you know, just the thrill of a lifetime. And, you know, from my perspective, I have so much respect for President Obama. I'm such a tremendous admirer. I'm one of those hardcore Obama loyalists, as you well know. I was a supporter of his. I was actually advising his Senate campaign. It's not a Senate campaign, his Senate office back in 2006. I signed on to his campaign very early in 2007. Worked very, very hard on his campaign. I've been in his administration from the very beginning, and just a great admirer. I think he's a historic, remarkable figure. My view is you never get a better sense of that than when you're watching him speak. This is a guy who understands the importance of his historic role and is able to communicate that oratorically in a way that very, very few other people are able to do it. And you find yourself, the true power of oratory is to take you to a place that you didn't think you were going to get. And he's able to remind us of what is the best in our country without being Pollyannish. He's able to take us to a place where, you know, he really selling the view effectively that government can make a difference in people's lives, but it's not the solution to every problem in people's lives, that the middle class is the most important thing. It's the engine that drives our economy. It's the centerpiece of an agenda based on fairness. You know, he's so powerful in that way that the opportunity to get to see him do that in person was just, for me, a dream come true. The only other time I can remember feeling that way is I had the opportunity during the 2008 Democratic Convention. I was at his final speech at the stadium, and I was obviously nowhere near as close, but I got to see that speech, and that was the same kind of powerful, uplifting moment where you really got a sense of the promise of America. So it was just a privilege to have an opportunity to see both of those opportunities, and this most recent one especially.
All right, let's go back to the motorcade. You and the other members of the cabinet, you take the motorcade over to the Capitol. You get there, you get out, you go inside. You're waiting for the door person. It wasn't actually the sergeant-at-arms, but another person who introduced the various dignitaries who were there, including you and the other members of the cabinet. And then you walk into the well of Congress down that center aisle. And there are all these people on both sides of the aisle who are stopping people as they go by, who I assume all of those people, are they members of Congress and the Senate?
They're all members of either the House or the Senate. They're mostly members of the House. For me, it was really exciting. Let me just say, in order to be one of the members who is on that center aisle, they have to get there really early in the day.
You're kidding!
They have to physically occupy the space. Because, you know, a lot of people really want that space. So there are people who are there for hours and hours and hours holding their space so that they can shake hands with people as they come in the room. For me, it was really, that was a great additional treat because I didn't really know who was going to be along the aisle. So it was very exciting. One of the first faces I saw was the congressman who represented the district that we used to live in New Jersey, Congressman Bill Pascrell, who has been a great friend and a great supporter. And so he grabs me and gives me a big hug as I'm going down the aisle. And then a couple of congressmen I had been on the phone with earlier in the week were there, and I'm shaking hands with them. And I saw a congresswoman I knew 30 years ago in Houston when she was a local judge, Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, and she gave me a big hello. It was a thrill. And let me just say, the electricity in the room, maybe I was the only one who was feeling it because I was a newbie, but the electricity in the room is really remarkable. The television lights are extremely bright. You know, people are very excited. It's a real spectacle, and they know that they've got an important role to play in it. And so there were members of Congress I had never met. I'm quite confident I had never even been in a room with, who were greeting me like I was a long-lost brother.
Wow.
Now, that's fine, and I was happy to see them, and it's that kind of positive, affirmative spirit. It was very, very exciting walking down that aisle. Now, I was at the back of the line. You know, Secretary Kerry went first. But I was at the back of the line because I'm in acting, and let's be honest, I'm just nowhere near as important as the people who've been confirmed. So I was way at the back. So by the time I got in there, the line was moving pretty slowly because everybody is shaking hands with the people that they know best, Secretary Kerry,
yeah.
Secretary Panetta, Secretary Sebelius, the real, you know, the people who are best known in the cabinet. I'm surprised that anybody even bothered to say hi, but it was terrific for me and really very, very exciting.
Well, you know, what was cool was I recorded this thing on C-SPAN so that I could watch it. And when your head popped up there, I did for a moment think he's having his Zelig moment. All of a sudden, he's in the middle of this really important gathering here. So, all right, let's proceed now. You walk through this gauntlet of...
Before you get off the gauntlet, can I just say one other thing about it? So here's the surprising thing that never occurred to me, and that I don't know if it ever occurred to you. You and I are about the same height. You're a little bit taller than I am. And as you know, no one would ever describe me as slight or svelte.
No.
I'm a fairly large man.
Yes.
And it never occurred to me that in that setting that I would tower over a lot of the other people in the room. And as a result of that, the television cameras got a pretty good look at me.
Yes, they did.
They just happened to, I certainly didn't bribe Chuck Todd or anything like that. It just is a consequence of the fact that I'm a head taller than some of the people who were in that line.
With the bright red tie your son chose for you.
Exactly. Brilliant choice by my 11-year-old. As a consequence of that, my Facebook account and my Twitter account and my email and my texts went berserk because they saw me as I was walking in the room and they immediately wrote or texted or posted something on Facebook. But then, like, I was on camera for a while. I'm told, I haven't seen it yet. I actually haven't watched it yet. I know you have. But And so people kept texting me, and it sort of got to be a little bit crazy. I got these huge numbers of Facebook posts and texts. And so when I didn't have my phones with me. I didn't want to take anything in the room. God forbid my cell phone goes off while the President of the United States is giving his State of the Union address.
Yeah.
So I left it behind. When I got back in the car, I had this huge backlog of messages from folks saying, I saw you. And people were posting screenshots and pictures of their televisions, and it was, wow, it was really, really something. So it was nice. I feel like a lot of my friends got an opportunity to see me. I feel perhaps America got a little bit too much of Seth Harris on the screen that night.
Well, I'll tell you, the image, well, you and I have talked about this before in other photos with you and other officials, it's like, that guy is either somebody or a Secret Service agent because of the size. So, all right, now that you get through the gauntlet and you go over to your seat, which is to the president's left,
right,
also to the left of Speaker Boehner and Vice President Biden, and you sit down there, and then, you know, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, and he comes in, and there's the ovation, the double ovation, because then he gets reintroduced, and he launches into this speech. Now, the thing that anybody who's even a casual viewer of the State of the Union address knows is you're going to do applause breaks, and you're going to stand up repeated times. Here's my question to you. Who did you watch to know when it was appropriate to jump to your feet?
Well, the first thing I did when I sat down was I leaned over to the person sitting next to me. I'm not going to tell you who that was because I don't want to embarrass anybody. Let's just say I leaned over to somebody sitting in my area without picking anybody out. And I said, I just want you to know I'm following you on when to stand up. Because, you know, it turns out it's kind of a complicated little thing. You know, and, you know, different people are going to stand up for different things. And so there's this little subtle thing that at least I was doing. I won't speak for anybody else. I'm trying to look out of the corner of my eye and keep an eye on when the rest of the – I figured I'll follow the cabinet.
Yeah.
Because I'm the junior guy. I'm the least important guy here. I will follow what the rest of my cabinet colleagues do. So the president would say something. Some members of the House might start to stand up. A lot of the senators were behind me, so I couldn't see all of them as well. And then I would look over out of the corner of my eye. Okay, Tom Vilsack is standing up. I'm standing up. And then he would look over, and there's Kathleen Sebelius. Okay, standing up. And then, okay, John Kerry's on the street. I better get up. So I was following the other folks in the cabinet. I don't know that there's a right answer. And also, the problem is, if you look a little too far to your left, it's the Supreme Court. They never stand up.
I'm going to watch Sonia Sotomayor. She's a rookie too, but they're not allowed to stand up.
They're not allowed to stand up. Decorum suggests they. So I'm trying to follow the people who I think are sort of the best people to lead me through this little exercise.
Yeah. All right. So then the president gives his speech, and you know, to some it's a rousing success. To others on the other side of the aisle, it's not been a rousing success. But whatever it is, he finishes, and then he comes down after he says thank you. You know, all the television commentators go into analysis mode, but the cameras, especially the C-SPAN cameras, stay on him, and he walks over, and it looks like he's coming directly over to you, Seth, and then he stands right next to you, and I don't know if he chatted directly with you or with the other cabinet members, but you're now getting, again, more screen time. What's going through your mind at that point?
Right, he came down to his left, as he, I think, typically does, and he shakes hands with absolutely everybody. This is, let me just say, another of the things I really admire about the president. And I wouldn't say I've been in a lot of meetings with him, but I've been in a few meetings with him, and he starts every meeting by going around the room and shaking hands with every single person in the room. I really admire that. He makes you feel welcome. He wants you to know you're a participant. He thinks that you're important. A lot of people have seen that famous picture of the president doing a fist bump with a janitor in the Capitol building. That really captures who the guy is. He really likes and respects people and knows that that kind of gesture really matters to folks. So he gives everybody a handshake, a hug, a kiss, something like that. So he walks down and he shakes hands with everybody, and then he comes along the line, walked along the line that I was sitting in, and I was fairly close to the front of the room. I was sort of even with him when he was giving his speech, and he's shaking hands with the people to my right. Just before he got to me, he sees a bunch of members of the Senate, his former colleagues, who were sitting and standing behind me, including some people with whom he has very close relationships. Senator Tom Coburn was there, and Senator Bob Casey is there, and others with whom he has good relationships, and even those that he didn't know maybe as well. He's still warmly greeting everybody because that's what he does. But he happened to do that standing directly in front of me.
Yeah.
Now, that, again, it's just the serendipity of where I'm sitting. This is not Barack Obama is, you know, Seth Harris's best buddy. You know, he just happened to stand there because that's where the senators he wanted to talk to were. So I'm standing right next to the President of the United States as he's shaking hands with the members of the Senate. And as you can probably see, for those of you who saw the pictures, I had a gigantic grin on my face because, after all, there's the President of the United States, a man I admire tremendously, who just gave a fantastic speech about, you know, expanding the middle class, growing America's economy from the middle out, raising the minimum wage, bringing manufacturing jobs back to St. Louis and to the rest of America. I mean, a tremendous, terrific speech on issues that are right at the core of the Labor Department's mission that I care about a great deal. And so I'm glowing with pride and just in what he did. And there he is standing in front of me, not for a short period of time. And then as he stood up from shaking hands with everybody, he gave me a nice warm handshake and a big pat on the shoulder. And I'll tell you, I'm going to lunch on that for the rest of my life.
I was going to ask you, did he give you a, hey, how you doing? You know, one of those like, all right, I've said hello to my friends here. Oh, yeah, hi, how are you? But it wasn't. It was actually the handshake and the hand on the shoulder, huh?
It was. And I'm not going to tell you what he said. He's a very, very generous man, and I was just grateful to be there with him.
All right. Now the president leaves, and you get to leave, and there's that, I'm sure, euphoria for a lot of the people in the room, there's that euphoria. And then do you still have official responsibilities you have to do afterwards? Is there a spin room that they send you to?
No, I'm not a television talking head. I'm the kind of guy who, after an event like that, gets to go home and tell his wife all about it.
Uh-huh.
And so I came back and I reported in great detail to my wife, who was very patient and helped me to calm down from the excitement. And that was the evening for me.
Well, I got to tell you, all of us who saw it were, you know, who know you, were impressed, as your Twitter and Facebook feeds and your voicemail proved. But it wasn't a remarkable moment for you, but I also for me, because I've known you through this whole process, and I know how big it was for you, and it just reinforced for me how proud I am of my little brother, who is standing there literally next to the President of the United States at the State of the Union address. Pretty damn cool.
Well, thanks a lot. And you know, for me and for people like me who are in politics and in government because we really think that government and politics can make a difference in people's lives, watching an event like this where a man you admire tremendously, a great president, is laying out an agenda that is going to, I think, move the country forward in a very important way, and is garnering the support of the people in the room. And there was cheering and chanting and tremendous enthusiasm for a great deal of what was in his speech, and rallying people at home to things that they know they want and that they really care about, and laid out a vision of an America that resonated with the American people. You know, to me, it's hard to imagine a more exciting event. And it was really a privilege, and the kind of thing I'm going to be, for all the tough nights, for all the bureaucratic struggles, for all the challenges that you face working in government, just the opportunity to sit there and see him do that was worth every minute of the 12 years I've invested in the Labor Department and in trying to help make working people's lives a little bit better.
Well, congratulations again. And I know you got a very busy schedule here. You're actually on the road now promoting some of these ideas for the Labor Department and for President Obama. So I really appreciate you taking time to join me here, Seth. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.